Well, do the voters want to sell or keep JEA? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect, and thanks for listening. Just ahead, a new UNF poll is out on a very hot topic, whether or not this city should sell off JEA. What do you think? Give us a call right now. It's 549-2937. Then later, local chefs come together for a good cause and a little competition. But first this morning, a new poll out today shows there is strong and bipartisan opposition to selling JEA to a private company. 59% of voters polled in this area say they do not favor a sale. There's a lot to get into in these numbers. Here now with a closer look, we welcome back to the show Dr. Michael Binder. He directs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Always great to have you. What are your questions about the new poll showing strong opposition to selling JEA? Call us up. Let us know your opinion. It's 549-2937, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and tweets to @MelissaInJax. Already getting your tweets. Okay, tell us about the latest numbers on JEA. What'd you find out?
So unsurprisingly, folks are not very excited about the prospect of selling JEA. And what's interesting to me, and I'm always asked this by media, what surprises you about these things? And the fact that there's such strong opposition to selling is not surprising, but the differentiation across parties or lack thereof is really surprising. In fact, Republicans are even more opposed to selling JEA than Democrats by a few points. And that's something that really kind of struck me about these numbers. I mean, Democrats are at 58% opposition, but Republicans are at 63. And that's something that I find very interesting.
And why do you think that is?
I don't know the answer to it just yet. And I think it might be a somewhat of a factor of, you know, these folks might be paying attention a little bit more. They tend to turn out. They tend to be more engaged voters on average. So maybe they're listening and looking more. I'm not totally sure yet.
Okay. It's 549-2937. Tell us your thoughts about the push to sell JEA. You also released in this poll your opinion that the public could be persuaded to change their minds on this if they are offered rebates, say $1,000 a piece to every ratepayer out there, if the sale goes through, right?
And I think that's one thing to keep in mind. We don't have an actual proposal at this point yet. We don't know what, this is a hypothetical sale. And I've used this analogy with a couple of people. Do you want to sell your house? No, I don't want to sell my house. Hey, here's $8 million. Guess what? You can have my house. So once we see what that number is, and if there are rebates like they have been alluded to, there might be rebates for ratepayers. Suddenly, if you get $1,000, $1,500 check, suddenly that might alter your calculus and how you feel about selling JEA.
You also found JEA's CEO Aaron Zahn has dismal job approval ratings. Just 33% of the voters approve of the job he's doing.
He is underwater. More people disapprove than approve. He's the only public figure in our series of data that came out yesterday and today that has anybody underwater. Heck, even Alvin Brown, when he lost re-election, he had a positive job approval. So yeah, he is far and away an outlier in this. And clearly it's because of what's happening with JEA.
Because of what's happening. Now, as this is going on, the city council has kicked off a series of workshops looking at the prospect of selling JEA. The Jacksonville Civic Council, a powerful business group, weighed in this week and said they don't recommend it. They think it's basically a bad idea. So given all this opposition and your polling data as well, will this move, do you think, the city council one way or the other in how they handle this?
Well, I certainly think the Civic Council is an influential organization here in the city. And then coming out was a big deal. And that was after our poll. So who knows, you know, maybe something like that could even strengthen opposition. I think right now it's a lot of wait and see. Once we see a proposal and once we see what the details look like, I think that might really give some folks an opportunity to stand up. There are more folks on city council, this council, than in previous councils that are willing to stand up to the mayor's office. So there is opportunity, I think, for council to take a stand here.
They have to weigh a couple of different outcomes. Will they face more blowback from their voters or from City Hall, the fourth floor of City Hall, in how they vote on this?
Right. And ultimately, if there are enough voters in opposition to this, that will outweigh City Hall. But if it's close, you know, City Hall is a powerful and influential organization up there.
Okay, it's Mike Binder from UNF's polling lab with us again today. Right now we're talking about the new polling data on selling JEA. Not a surprise, Mike found out the majority of you are against the idea, but we want to hear from everyone, so give us a call right now and let us know what you think. It's 549-2937. Bruce is in Yulee. Hey, Bruce, good morning. Are you a JEA customer?
Not currently, but I was for about 50 years.
Oh, okay.
So my view is selling JEA actually will, you know, hurt Northeast Florida overall, because JEA is a regional infrastructure provider, and they provide a lot back to all the communities in Duval, Clay, Nassau, St. Johns County. And also, the current leadership of JEA is missing major opportunities. Since all their background is about merger and acquisition, they're not operating the utility properly. Today, they're missing the opportunity of historic low interest rates to refinance debt and take that savings and put it back into the community.
Okay, Bruce, thanks for that. Mike Binder, what about his comments?
Sir, I mean, listen, JEA is not only in Duval County, but also in St. John's, and it spreads around. I'm personally am not a JEA. I live out at the beaches, so I have beaches energy. But the role that JEA plays and their responses to storms, the local influence that they have, that's something that might not get as much attention, particularly in a coastal city like Jacksonville that does face storms occasionally. So I think there's things to worry about. You know, what are the impacts on rates going forward? There's a lot to consider and how that might affect maybe a business who wants to move here and bring a big operation to town.
Okay, playing devil's advocate for a minute. Say JEA gets subsumed into a big Florida energy giant, Florida Power and Light.
Hypothetically,
let's assume that for a minute. They have decent customer service ratings. They are seen as responsive after major storms. Supporters of selling have said, look, it could be just fine.
It could be. But if you look at the rates that they're paying, they tend to be higher than what JEA is paying. Mm-hmm. And not by a dollar or two, you know, significantly higher. So that's one thing to consider. Yeah, there might be a giant windfall of cash today, but what does that look like 5, 10, 15 years down the road?
Mark is on the west side. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm against the sale of JEA as a first comment. But, you know, I don't believe in any kind of conspiracy theories except where it involves Shad Khan. And I just noticed that a week or two ago that he floated a little trial balloon that he's going to need a $700 million brand new stadium. Although there's nothing wrong with the one we've got now. Is that a coincidence or not, do you think, that all of a sudden we're looking at selling the JEA, we're going to have a couple of, you know, billion dollars floating around on the table, and son of a gun, Shad Khan needs just a little piece of that, and you know he'll get it if he asks for it. So I was just wondering if the two things might be related.
Sure, Mark. Thanks for that. Yeah, that is a big question people have, Mike, whether or not the money would go to the Jaguars or somewhere else. People have been asking the mayor and supporters of this idea, if you really want to sell this utility, what are you going to do with the money? And no one's answered that question.
There's been no answer to that question. It's part of the reason, and I think it's a legitimate reason, is we don't know how much money that ultimately is going to be. There's a big difference between $4 billion and $10 billion and the amount that has to go to paying off pension debts for JEA employees as opposed to the city. There's a lot of moving parts. Whether or not this is going to lead to a new football stadium is, you know, who knows at this point. But I will say this, as a season ticket holder to a non-Jaguars team, I've been through the situation of getting a new stadium, and you know, 30 years is about their shelf life nowadays.
What was the team?
I'm a New York Giants fan.
Okay. All right.
But 30 years is about the shelf life of these stadiums. And if you start looking at, wow, how long has Everbank been here? We're getting up around that number. And those are, you know, there's going to be a push for a new stadium. Make no mistake about it.
Larry on the west side. Hey, Larry, good morning. What are your thoughts?
Yes. How you doing?
Okay.
All right. Okay, the citizens of Jacksonville has said a resounding no to the powers that be in terms of selling the utilities. And why does the city council, you know, and the mayor and the powers that be persist in, ramming it down our throats. We said no, I mean, look out there in California out there, that big utility company out there, they privatized it. And, how did that work out? Yeah. So it's ridiculous. They're not hearing us at all.
All right, Larry. Thanks for that. Mike, he brings up an important point. Larry on the West Side, whether it's the notion of selling JEA or the other big controversy right now, the half-cent sales tax to fix up crumbling school buildings, the public is overwhelmingly against selling JEA and overwhelmingly for, according to your poll numbers, levying a half-cent sales tax for schools. Yet in both of those issues, there's a strong perception that the city officials are ignoring the will of the voters.
Well, certainly, I think that's very clear with the sales tax. And there was a lot, I think the big issue with the sales tax was, how that money got allocated for charter schools or how it didn't get allocated for charter schools. Now is a huge sticking point. And right now it's in the courts. And ultimately, I think they'll probably
have to say.
The city
has been sued over this.
Yes.
Yeah.
The JEA issue, I think we don't have a proposal yet. So yes, they're moving forward with this process. It's been initiated. It's going to play out. At the end of the day, we're going to be presented with a little package that's going to have a price tag attached to it and some details that may not be fully fleshed out, but we will have at least some proposal. At that point, I think it's incumbent upon not only the city hall, but city council as well. And ultimately, it's going to come before the voters if it gets to that point. So we will have an opportunity to have our voices heard.
Okay. Meanwhile, lots of tweets, people making their voice heard on this. No to the JEA sale, says one listener. Golden parachutes, proposed rebates, secret deals, unqualified CEO. This whole thing stinks. Just to line cronies' pockets or for the mayor to save face on its botched pension plan. I vote no. And I've got about 10 other tweets saying much the same thing. Here's one from David. I oppose this sale. Support the transition to a 21st century energy business strategy. And the tweets go on from there. What about that comment that some voters see this as a way for the city to get out from under a massive pension debt?
I certainly think a couple of billion dollars floating around city coffers will be very helpful in that regard. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, right? Long-term debt is potentially very problematic. However, you have to look at where those costs are going to be recouped, right? There's no free lunch. The money doesn't grow on trees and we don't regenerate it. It's going to come from somewhere and it's going to come ultimately from ratepayers paying increased rates. And if that's what you want to do, that's fine. It's another version of a tax, but it's just not called a tax.
A few more comments on our Facebook page. Here's one from Perry. If it ain't broke, don't fix it or sell it. Anthony, government was never intended to be in business. Mark, we need more transparency from JEA and more research on the matter. Well, certainly the city council is attempting to fulfill that role right now, Mark. And we'll continue to follow it here on the show and in our news department. Let's go to a few more calls. Cheryl is in Arlington right now. Hey, Cheryl, good morning to you.
Hello?
Hey, go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
First of all, I wanted to register the fact that I am for keeping JEA. When you sell it to a private company like California did, they tend to look at profits over keeping up the lines and the equipment, the infrastructure. And their lines have sparked fires in California. And to keep from doing that, now they have rolling blackouts. Because it's a private company, it looks at profit rather than keeping the equipment nice. There are more opportunities. And everybody's trying.
Yep, we lost her a little bit. But okay, she's the second caller to bring up PG&E in California. Because, of course, that's generating national headlines. How that utility is handling the wildfires out there. And a lot of people have been without power in some parts of the state. So how is that playing into this?
So I think, obviously, we don't suffer from Santa Ana wind conditions like they do in coastal California. And I lived in California, and it's a real thing. And those 40, 50, 60-plus mile-an-hour winds that come out of the mountains are very dry, very strong, and California is a desert, and certainly they are subject to wildfires. It is nothing new. It is not necessarily because of a private power company. This has been going on forever. But how that company responds to those circumstances, just like here on the coast in Florida, how companies respond to hurricanes is really important for ratepayers. You know, if you're out for 8 or 10 or 12 hours, like I have been at the beaches, mm-hmm. that's very different than 8 or 10 or 12 days.
Yeah.
Particularly in Florida in the summertime when it's hot, we saw what happened during Matthew, particularly at the senior centers where people were dying. So it is vital that you have an organization, it be it public or private, that can handle and respond to those circumstances.
David is in Springfield. Hello, David. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. I was just calling to say that what's really frustrating about this whole situation is that, you know, there's a lot of citizens that seem to be against the sale. However, you know, people have their own lives to deal with, so it's hard to, like, really do much about it as far as, like, reaching out to your counselor person or reaching out to the mayor or even trying to protest this situation. But I'm against it. It doesn't make sense to me to make this sale seem short-sighted. And what's really also frustrating is, like, there's no real accountability of what is the real reason why we're even considering the sale. What are we addressing? What's the money going to be used for? And even though this has been brought up many times, there's still no answers. And yet the sale is going to continue to be pursued without any accountability. And that's just been really frustrating for me as a resident of Jacksonville.
Thanks, David. You know, let me just take a moment to say that here at WGCT and over at the Florida Times Union and all the other media outlets in this town, we'll continue to try to get answers for the public about this. You actually also polled on how voters out there feel about the Florida Times Union. They have had the most comprehensive coverage of this issue. Why did you decide to ask them about the Times Union?
Well, I think a couple of reasons. One, I'm a political scientist by trade, and I fervently believe that the media is a pillar of democracy, and absent a free and active and qualified media and a trusted media, you know, democracy really faces dire circumstances. And the Times Union is the leading newspaper in the region, and I think that the work that they do on local government is in a lot of ways what drives conversation here in town. So it was interesting to us to see, do other folks, you know, do they approve the job that they're doing covering what, you know, local government and what I think is, you know, a hallmark of that entity. And lo and behold, there's a lot of support for them. You know, 44% approve of the job that you're doing covering local government. Only 26% oppose. A lot of folks don't know. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a good thing that we have an organization that people have faith in covering local issues.
That is good to hear. Mark is in St. Augustine. Hey, Mark, go ahead. What are your thoughts?
Hey, good morning. I don't have JEA. My dad retired from JEA, and I'm not opposed either for keeping it as a community-owned utility or for selling it. I mean, Duke Power, Florida Power and Light, I think they all do very good jobs. But one thing I think that might be helpful is if, for example, let's say WJCT offered an hour of TV time on a Thursday night, a half hour for the city to plead their case, a half hour for the opponents of selling the utility to plead their case and let people understand. And I would be in favor. I never really thought about the whole Shad Khan thing to your previous caller, but I would be in favor of at least holding the city's feet to the fire if they say, hey, we have this windfall of money coming in and we have to address these unfunded pension mandates that are coming down the pike. I mean, if that is a reality, then yeah, that's something that you have to look at from the city's financial perspective. But I just think it'd be kind of interesting to have a opportunity where instead of just a 30-second soundbite or a little bit of space in the newspaper, that the folks could sit there and plead their case for or against it.
Mark, thanks for that. I think all of us here would be in favor of that. Whether or not we could book city officials to appear on television and do that, I honestly don't know if that's a possibility or not. Let me just say this, though. We will be having JEA Executive Carrie Stewart on the show next week. She's appeared before talking about this. So,
yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah.
And I think part of the problem with the marketing of this entire effort has been a lack of reasoning and a lack of transparency. And that's something the Civic Council came out with the other day. You know, the process, you know, I think there's a lot of folks out here that might be open to the idea if they were given reasons for. And
make the case.
Make the case. It hasn't been made. And I think that is the real problem here, and the fact that it's going on behind closed doors and keeping the public out of the loop.
Okay. On a lighter note, you pulled on a few other matters. Let's get into those. We talked about plastic straws yesterday on the show, a very divisive issue locally. A slight majority of voters are against a possible future ban on single-use plastic straws in restaurants. That was interesting.
Yeah. And so... Again, the
whole it's a serious issue. I don't mean to trivialize it.
Right. It's not. But in general, I fervently believe that the role of public opinion is most useful when communicating the will of the people on issues as opposed to horse race election results. Horse race election results get me all the attention, have me in here a lot of times talking about issues. But I think, you know, how we feel about JEA, how we feel about plastic straws, how we feel about the school tax, how we feel about appointed versus elected school boards. I think those are issues that really matter in and being able to communicate information to elected officials that might not get that information otherwise. If you don't go to City Hall on Monday or Tuesday, you don't get your voice heard.
You also found that a majority of those polled are in favor of Nick Foles being the Jaguars' starting quarterback over Gardner Minshew. And then last but not least, you polled on the matter of an elected versus an appointed superintendent. Here's an email about that from Chris. Like charter schools and getting your weight in ice cream, it might initially sound good, but once people learn more about it, electing a superintendent will lose its luster. Less than 1% of the nation's public education students go to schools that have an appointed superintendent. And so you found a majority of people like that idea. That's something we'll continue to follow.
Right.
As well.
And this is an issue that really hasn't been discussed in great detail in the public discourse. By and large, folks are going to be supportive of ideas if they get to vote and have their voice heard and have their say. So it wasn't surprising that people were in favor of it. But that person's, you know, there's potential impacts to that that we have to be considered that really haven't been fleshed out yet. Once those get discussed, you know, potentially opinion might move on that issue.
And we always appreciate you taking the pulse of this community. Mike Binder directs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab. More results on our website at wjct.org. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
And up next, making the switch to cleaner fuels here in Florida. We'll be right back.
Learn how to relax in Provence.
They say that the Provençal people are the cicadas and the northern French are the ants.
Explore Germany's challenges.
We're all unified and happy and together, but it's not really working like this.
And get to know Poland's popular port city.
There's a lot of culture and general evening bustle in Gdańsk these days.
On the next Travel with Rick Steves.
Saturday morning at 7 on 89.9 WJCT. WJCT and Vistar Credit Union are honoring the legacy of Fred Rogers with the 17th annual Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive. The drive runs through November 30th and accepts new and gently used sweaters, jackets, and blankets. Contributions may be dropped off at WJCT, all Vistar Credit Union branches, Sudduth Moving and Logistics, and the Tom Bush family of dealerships. For more information, visit wjct.org/events. Contributions will be donated to area nonprofit organizations.
That sound means you're in the Electro Lounge, where fresh, down-tempo, chill-out, and new jazz music plays Monday through Saturday nights at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Welcome back. The North Florida TPO, that's Transportation Planning Organization, well, they're holding a Clean Fuels Summit next week at UNF. Tom Larson is chair of the North Florida Clean Fuels Coalition. Hey, Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And full disclosure, the TPO is an underwriter here on our airwaves. Okay, so what is the North Florida Clean Fuels Coalition?
It is a nonprofit that is hosted by the TPO. We are a designated Clean Cities Program participant from the U.S. Department of Energy. And we are doing work to provide public education and foster consideration across the local economy for adoption of fuel options for fleets and for individuals to reduce air emissions of pollutants and to foster more attention to greenhouse gas.
Okay, so this is about cleaner air and reducing carbon emissions. What's the state of the use of alternative fuel in this area right now?
Well, it's remarkable. We've actually had some great advances. We have evidence of adoption by public entities for natural gas-powered buses. We have electric vehicles entering into a broader use. We have charging stations around the community, as well as several industrial operations are using lower emission fuels to support their transportation in the logistics world.
Okay, let me ask you about natural gas, liquefied natural gas fueling, for example, some buses that we see around town. Is that a clean fuel, or would it be more accurate to just say it's a cleaner fuel than?
I'd go along with the cleaner fuel element of that. It's some have called it a transition fuel. We are going to be seeing electric buses come into Jacksonville. JTA is bringing in two in the spring under a funding program, and they'll be able to experiment with that in the local scene.
Okay.
And natural gas is also part of the marine power world. We're using that to take ships down to Puerto Rico, and we're also beginning to ship fuel to the Caribbean to displace more dirty diesel fuel use down there.
Just the other day, a coalition of scientists around the world issued a dire warning saying if more aggressive action isn't taken to address the impacts of climate change and curb carbon emissions, in the future, people of Earth will be looking at, and I'm quoting, untold human suffering. It was as dire and stark as it could be. How important is it for cities like this one to get behind these kinds of initiatives?
It's very important for all of us to participate in the mitigation that's necessary to avoid such a future. And I've long been an advocate for that here in Jacksonville, and I've been supporting work that actually is moving the needle to get more electric cars on the road, to get the city to appreciate the opportunities to make the changes in our economy. And actually, the dollars are going to drive this change because the technology has gone from developmental to mainstream.
What kinds of technologies in particular?
Well, battery technologies have become very much more reliable for longer, full-day use, say, for a service vehicle. We can travel to different cities now in Florida with an electric car where that wasn't possible in the past. Mm-hmm. We're also seeing natural gas enter into some particular uses that it may be more suited for, such as garbage trucks or buses in the future.
So this change is coming along, critics say not fast enough, whether it's in Jacksonville or anywhere in America. What are the biggest obstacles to making this kind of transition, do you think?
We have investments that we've made in different ways that people feel the need to continue to amortize, if you will. And it's difficult to leave what they call abandoned costs
If you've got a car, like, break it down to the individual person. If you've got a car that's working pretty well and you don't have a car payment on it or you're close to paying it off, it's kind of hard to convince you to get rid of it and go buy an expensive new electric car.
I would agree with you. And the same thing I did personally, the time I needed to do a new car, I gave a lot of consideration to my options, and my wife and I actually bought an electric vehicle.
You'd made the commitment. So this is something you care deeply about, and you understand how important it is. It's hard to change hearts and minds on this, even now, even today.
Well, I think we just have to keep demonstrating the wisdom and the efficiency, the economics of the transition. It actually saves money in the long run. You may have some different profile of when you spend money, but you're going to spend less money now if you get an electric vehicle.
So this is just one of the things that's going to come up at the Clean Fuel Summit. What else is on the agenda next week?
It's actually a pretty interesting layout. There's two panels, morning, and then a keynote in the middle of the event, and then a second panel. One will be focused on clean fuels and logistics, being America's logistics hub. We're able to feature Jaxport and Pivotal LNG, also the East Coast Railway here, the Florida East Coast Railway will be on that panel. And then we'll have a representative of Drive Electric Florida, Peter King, speaking on the state of electrification. And finally, we'll close out with a panel on clean fuels and buses, and it'll connect to the VW settlement that came from their unexpected emissions.
Unexpected? What was that all about?
Well, the VW was misrepresenting the air quality performance of their diesel vehicles, and they got caught. And so now
That's
they're spending
right.
billions of dollars, and we're going to take advantage of some of that money here in Florida to make the transition to clean fuels for buses.
All over the state?
Yes, ma'am.
Those funds will go into cities like Jacksonville's bus fleet?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow. That's interesting and new. I did not know that. This is all in accordance with Tallahassee now finally really buckling down and looking at how to address climate change too.
We just have to recognize there are some investments that we're going to have to work out to be able to make the new changes. We can't expect somebody to be left overhanging with no out for the an investment that was made under a different thought regime, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And when as we can help those transition issues, we're going to move faster into this arena.
Well, this is just a short window into what you can learn next week at a really important event. It is the North Florida TPO's Clean Fuels Summit. Now, this is coming up next Wednesday morning on the UNF campus at the Herbert University Center. It kicks off at 9 a.m. You can register now if you go to northfloridatpo.com/CFSummit. And so check it out. It's going to be vital information for this community. Tom Larson is chair of the North Florida Clean Fuels Coalition. Tom, thank you.
You're welcome, Melissa.
More to come. Don't go away.
Whoa, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east.
Well, according to the March of Dimes latest report card, Florida earned a C-minus grade on preterm birth rates. And how about this? Jacksonville got an F-minus. Way too many preterm babies being born here. So there's no better time to support efforts to fight for the health of all moms and babies. If you want to take part, you're in luck, since the Signature Chefs auction is coming up next week, all to benefit the March of Dimes. Chef Tom Gray of Moxie and Town Hall is one of the participating chefs, and he's here now. Hey, Tom.
Good morning.
Chef Tom, you are one of the best chefs in town. I am so excited that you're here to tell us about this, because if you're going to be one of the chefs, I know people are going to turn out. And so tell us about Signature Chefs.
It's a really great event. It's one of the more intimate events. It's a smaller group, I think around 250 people. So you really get a chance to taste some really great dishes, really interact with the chefs. It's a wonderful event for a great cause.
So you pay one ticket and you get to eat your way through some of the best culinary creations in this area,
absolutely.
Right?
You get to taste lots of great tastes, some wines, some cocktails. It's all there.
Who all is coming to cook besides yourself?
There are nine other chefs. We have Chef Zach from Azora, Chef Carrie from Mezza, Chef Chris from Royal Palm, Chef Tony from Publix, Aprons, Chef Laird, who won last year with Ice Plant, Chef Don with Barrique, Chef Steve with Congaree and Penn, Chef Logan of 19 TPC. So, you know, great lineup.
Wow. So there's competition too. You're competing against each other.
Yes.
How do you get rated? How do you get evaluated?
It's really easy. You just have to remember to vote for me.
Right. Exactly. So the diners vote.
Yes. The guests that buy tickets have they get a little ticket with their ticket, and they vote with that ticket, and they go through and count them all up.
So you want to be top chef.
I do.
This is your moment.
I do.
And this is a way to support March of Dimes. As I said, premature birth and its complications are the biggest contributors to infant mortality in the U.S. and around the world. We lead the world in medical research and care, but at the same time, we have one of the highest preterm birth rates of any developed nation. Every year in Florida, nearly 23,000 babies are born prematurely. The March of Dimes, which we all know, has been for decades now working to improve the health of moms and babies. And so this is the big deal every year for the March of Dimes, because Signature Chefs is really just one of the most fun events around. It's a popular and long-running event. It's now in its 29th year on the First Coast, which is incredible.
Yes. I think I've been at least 10 of those.
Just to eat or to cook?
No, cooked for at least 10 of them.
At least 10. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your career as a chef. Moxie, of course, when you opened that, huge hit. And you also now have Town Hall in the San Marco Square.
Yes.
So tell me all about the life of running two restaurants. It's, with your wife, by the way, who is so incredible.
To say it's chaotic would be an understatement. Trying to be in two places at one time every day is a challenge. But it's also very exhilarating. I have a fantastic team. You know, everyone works so well together. It's been just a true pleasure to work with this team, watch so many people around me grow also, and watch our businesses grow. So it's been really amazing.
What do diners in this area really want? What are you getting from your feedback from your customers? What do they care the most about?
Gosh, they seem to care about, ingredient sourcing, they want big, bold flavors. They're really enjoying cocktails. Wine, took a little bit of a backseat, but wine seems to be coming back now. In fact, we're at Town Hall this next month. We're doing a whole month of wine focused programs, including wine flights. So we'll be announcing that any moment now. So
nice. You know, just the other day, I interviewed the author of a book called Food Town USA, mm-hmm. and he profiled 7 cities around the country that he called unlikely food cities. And Jacksonville was one of them. He wrote a chapter on Jacksonville, just documenting how the food scene here has exploded.
Absolutely.
And you've been here before that. You've been here a long time. So before that even started to take off, you were here. What do you think's driving that?
Well, a lot of talented young chefs, have all come here. It's a great place to put down roots. It's more affordable than other cities. So there's, and talent feeds on talent. So as more and more restaurants grow, John Ansetta and his group, all these other folks have done the same thing of nourishing younger talent and bringing it along. I'm usually the oldest guy at the table at this point.
Well, you're doing something right. I mean, 90%+ of restaurants fail is the statistic, isn't it?
Yes.
You have 2 very successful restaurants. What are you doing right that others haven't figured out? Because most people fail.
Well, we listen to our guests and we do everything we can to bring hospitality from the moment you walk in the door to the moment you leave. And we focus on consistency. You know, it doesn't mean you get it right every time, but when you focus on it and make it a priority, it tends to show.
Yeah. So it's all about the customer. It's all about the experience.
It's the whole experience.
You know, what's interesting too is even during the height of the recession, or the depths of the recession, I should say, people never stopped going out to eat.
They slowed down, but they never stopped.
Never fully stopped.
Yes.
Why do you think?
I think it's one of those, it's always some level of escape or treat. And I'm sure folks, we all do it. We pick and choose how much do we want to treat ourselves. Sometimes it's just a break from cooking and it's something quick and simple. And sometimes it's that whole experience. I want to go be pampered. I want to be taken care of.
So where do chefs go like you when you want that experience, when you want someone to serve you and cook for you?
You really put me on the spot.
Where does Chef Tom go out to eat?
I as often as I can, you know, I do like to go out and I tend to stay close to my neighborhood. You know, I live in San Marcos, so I end up typically at Taverna, Rue, Matthews. I get over to BB's, so it's, you know, but I'm typically in my neighborhood.
So you patronize all the San Marco
locals.
Haunts.
I do.
Anywhere else?
Oh gosh. Yeah. I'm trying to think where.
What else is on your radar right now?
Yeah. I was at Doro a few months ago and I loved it. I can't remember where I've been lately.
So diplomatic.
I've been so busy. I haven't been out as much as I'd like
That's true. I don't know how you do it. I really don't know how you run two great restaurants at the same time.
Yeah. And I also go in to eat at my own restaurants too, to see how we're doing, you know, from our standpoint. I was at Town Hall just two nights ago having dinner. I brought a few folks in to see, you know, and it's an opportunity for me to see what our dishes taste like sitting down with, you know, in the dining room also. So it's a little bit of both.
You know, for Halloween, my youngest daughter said she wanted to go as a famous chef. She couldn't decide between Guy Fieri and Gordon Ramsay. She ended up going as Guy Fieri. Those are both almost cartoonish mm-hmm. kind of celebrity chefs in the way
they're certainly famous though.
Very famous though. What are your thoughts about the whole cult of celebrity chefs? And is that something you ever aspired to?
I'm not already a cult.
You are in this town.
Yeah. It's just, yeah. Honestly, I've never put a ton of thought into it. It's, you know, it does seem to be a little bit distracting from the restaurants. Like it's challenging enough getting enough time, you know, with the team, and, you know, splitting your time between two restaurants. So it's challenging.
Yeah. You're focused on the work less so than the publicity.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is why you do such a good job. And so with all of that said, the 29th annual Signature Chefs event is coming up at the Tim Aquana Club. Now, this is going to be really a cool, cool and delicious event. You're lending your support to the March of Dimes and funding their mission when you attend. You need to go to the website signaturechefs.org/Jacksonville and sample the culinary delights of Chef Tom and 9 other chefs from the best places in town. This is coming up. Remind me?
It's next week, November 14th.
On the 14th at Tim Aquana. Again, that is signaturechefs.org/Jacksonville. Help fund the mission of March and Dimes and party with the best chefs in this community. And I'm all the other chefs will be very upset with me. Vote for Tom.
I'll take your vote. Thank
as
you.
Top chef. And always good to see you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's going to be a lot of fun and well worth the price of admission. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And in a moment, don't miss this. Lots of live music we're going to treat you with. First off, Mindy Hebert is rocking the WJCT soundstage with her band, the Bone Shakers. We will talk to Mindy next about the big show, plus a live performance showcasing this region's songbook. It's a female singer-songwriter showcase. We'll hear from performer Pamela Elaine in just a moment. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Grammy-winning violinist James Ennis has been called ferociously virtuosic. I'm Courtney Lewis. You'll hear that virtuosity when Ennis joins the symphony and me for Edward Elgar's beautiful violin concerto on November 15th and 16th. Tickets and more at jacksymphony.org.
On the next Fresh Air, the fight between Congress and the Trump administration over the House's legal right to enforce subpoenas requiring senior administration aides to testify in the impeachment inquiry. We talk with journalist Emily Bazelon, a staff writer at the New York Times Magazine. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
We hear about artificial intelligence all the time, right? But for the most part, it's still got a ways to go.
If you're looking at raw computing power, it's somewhere around the level of an earthworm, something like that.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. What AI can and can't do. Next time on Marketplace.
Today at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Social media is good at making us feel bad. Its latest pithy put-down? Okay, boomer. As in baby boomer. Generational divides are nothing new, but this diss speaks to the fear many young Americans have of cleaning up their parents' and grandparents' messes. We'll unpack this new B-word next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, two-time Grammy-nominated performer Mindy Hebert brings blues rock energy to mainstream music with her band, the Bone Shakers. Mindy's had multiple hits on the Billboard chart. She actually used to be a UNF student. She's gone on to play with many of the music industry's biggest names. Mindy Hebert is rocking the WJCT soundstage next week. We got to look ahead to the big show.
This is exciting. Tell us a little bit about what we can expect out of the show.
You know what? The show is going to be a blast. My band is just high energy, fun, somewhere in between blues, rock, and jazz. You know, you'll get sucked in. You'll be dancing. You'll be up. You'll be singing along, you know. That's what happens.
Now, in addition to the great music, we are giving ticket holders an upgrade opportunity, a VIP pre-show event with you and your husband. He's a wine expert. We're going to get to taste some wine. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, if there's anything that's going to make the show better, it's, you know, a little alcohol.
Sure.
So it's good for everyone. But my husband, Eric, has been in the wine business most of his life. And we finally came together and made our own company, which kind of takes the best of both of us. It's a wine and music private membership. So what we do is four times a year, he finds incredible wines that no one else can find. And we bottle them up, package them up. I put a playlist together based on the style of the wine and, you know, kind of what it feels like, what it sounds like to me. So what people will get is you can come before and be a part of this tasting. He's going to tell you about the wines and like go through them one by one and do tasting notes. And then I'm going to play and, you know, kind of play what I feel like the wine is and give the musical aspect of it.
Don't miss your chance to grab a ticket to see Mindy Hebert and the Bone Shakers. Mindy, thanks so much, and we're looking forward to seeing you.
I can't wait to come home to Florida, so come on out, and I promise a great show.
That's Mindy Hebert and the Bone Shakers live at the WJCT Soundstage next Wednesday night in partnership with Florida Theater. Get your tickets at floridatheater.com. All right, more music now. Finally this hour, singer-songwriter Pamela Elaine, who founded the local singer-songwriter showcase for women called Songbook, has some new music out, and she will be releasing it at Blue Jay Listening Room tomorrow night. She joins us now for a sneak peek. Hey, Pamela.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, and it's so good to have you with us. You created a brand new EP. It's coming out tomorrow night at Blue Jay. Tell us about the new music.
Well, it's not exactly new, to be honest, and this is the plight of every musician, is we hold on to music for entirely too long before we actually release it. But over the past couple years, I've created about six songs that I really enjoy and that I think kind of speaks to just the human condition about, you know, the joy of life and the sadness of life. And the EP is called As You Go, because the Greek word for go is a little bit different than ours. We just think of getting from point A to point B. but the Greek word for go is better translated in as you go. So it's kind of like the process is the point of it, not just getting there, but experiencing it, being present, and accepting everything for what it is. So these are just a couple songs that kind of point out those moments in life.
Excellent. Well, we're so excited to get a treat. It's a preview of your show tomorrow night at the Blue Jay Listening Room. Here she is now, Pamela Elaine.
Thank you.
I passed by at exactly the right moment to watch you crash down after 100 or so years. You took with you some of the man-made things that we foolishly placed beside you, thinking you'd stay there. Oh, you're gone, oh, you're gone so quickly. Oh, you're gone, oh, you're gone so quickly. All that bark, all those leaves, all of you in part of me. Oh, you're gone so quickly. Sound was heard around the neighborhood, and some people even say they witnessed transformers explode. But just as quickly as it came, it went. And before I could even blink my eyes, yeah, we're done. And oh, you're gone, oh, you're gone so quickly. Oh, you're gone, oh, you're gone so quickly. Sparks and wires trounced on flowers, everything we'd fertilized. Oh, you're gone so quickly. We walked among your branches, we held you in our arms, we gathered up your limbs as we began to mourn. We searched among the pieces looking for what caused the fall. The sickness had spread much further than we'd known. We gathered up your arms, we walked side by side right past the outer walls. We left you outside, 'cause you're gone.
Beautiful. Keep singing. Keep singing. Go see Pamela tomorrow night. Pamela Elaine at the Blue Jay Listening Room. Beautiful. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.